Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right. Save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right. What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
This episode is also dedicated to Mrs. Ashley Hugbees of Fuller's Earth, Arizona. Because we like saying the word Hugbees. Go ahead. Try it.
It's time to relax. You know what that means. Glass of wine, your favorite easy chair. So go on and indulge yourself. That's right. Kick off your shoes, put your feet up, lean back and just enjoy the melodies.
Let's rock.
Hey guys, what's going on? You are listening to Twig, the flagship of stupidity. I am one of your many hosts as we trek through the world of, well, basically, the stupid, the nuts, the weird, and the sadly tragic this week. I am Mike the Birdman Dotta, and joined on my right with...
Mr. Christopher, who can only think about Sea of Thieves right now. It's coming.
Alex.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off? What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made.
Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Lee Emperor Wayne Johnston.
Ah, yes, the supreme archon of stupidity. I like you. Anyway, guys, so yes, we are here for another exciting episode of Twig. Hopefully you've been enjoying our relaunch. We're a month in right now, which is pretty exciting, I gotta say. We're having a lot of fun doing the show. Coming up on this week's show, we have some fantastic reviews coming to you from Alex. Actually has an indie title called Little Triangle, which is something you can check out on Steam, the Switch, and I think those are the only platforms it's available for right now.
Yeah.
Also, we have a review from myself of the Justice League movie, and I think you'll be pleasantly surprised by what I have to say, or shocked, rather. Also, we have Satan's Pantry this week, where we actually take a look at a snack that actually has some of its roots in pop culture of late, and we're going to dedicate our entire news segment this week to the memory of Professor or Dr. Stephen Hawking, who passed away this week at age 75. He passed away on March 14th, rather fortuitous, Albert Einstein's birthday, as well as Pi Day, of all things. So I guess as we often do, we often go around the room. Tristan was mentioning Sea of Thieves. That'll be coming up next week, I think.
Yes, coming up on the Tuesday after recording this, the game's coming out, and I played the open beta last week. All I can think about is this game now. I am so excited.
I'm actually really surprised the servers for that are not live now, because there's got to be enough reviewers out there, but I guess they want the general population to come in and actually play with you. So it's not just review impressions, it's generally a world launch.
Yeah, the entire idea, it's an emergent gameplay game, so there's a lot of interacting with other players, so limiting the player base would really limit the experience as well. So they want to make sure everything's all together, everyone's enjoying it at the same time.
It's a game I'm curious to try. I'm very curious to try, because at E3 last year, when it was showing off, I wasn't exactly like, ooh, but hearing you squee about it is kind of like, okay, if Tristan can dig it, maybe it's not so bad.
I have a couple employees who played the beta tests earlier last month, as well as this month, and he cannot shut up about it, and like he tells me stories about the various adventures he's been having on the high seas, and I'm really interested in seeing this game. I personally don't have an Xbox One, but this is, might be the game that brings me to that point.
Oh, wow.
And the thing is, I had zero interest in this game at all during its entire development cycle. I'm like, okay, that's weird. Whatever, cool. That's fine. Not my type of game. I played the open beta because a couple of my friends downloaded it and say, hey, join in, it's free, open, whatever. I played it for a few hours, and I am just hooked so hard.
See, I was more interested in the Ubisoft pirate game, which I'm pretty sure is just built off the back of the Black Flag pirate open sea part, which I can't remember. I think it's called Open Sails or something like that.
Skull and Bones.
Or Skull and Bones. Bones, that's it. Yeah. That looks cool.
See, I've not been interested in either, but the thing with... It's not Rare that I remember, so I'm apprehensive because everything Rare has put out from Microsoft has been... Eek. Be honest, ich.
Killer Instinct?
Ich.
But that's not Rare. That's
it's not even them. That's an IP. They didn't even develop it. So it's like the Banjo game that came out.
Oh, Nuts and Bolts was garbage. Mm.
So, I mean, I'm just, it's not the same team. So that's why I'm apprehensive until it actually comes out.
Yeah, so we'll have a review of Sea of Thieves next week here on the show. So now that I've dated it, Tristan, you're on board for that.
Oh, I got this. I got this.
I'm looking forward to it. So that'll be something we'll have to check out next week. And of course, you can expect the rest of the stupidity from us here at Twig. But we're going to throw things over to Alex as he takes a look at an indie title on the Nintendo Switch and the PC. This is Little Triangle.
I feel so utterly exposed and vulnerable. And not in that fun, spanky way.
Hey everyone, Alex here, and I have a review of a Nintendo Switch indie title, Little Triangle from Cotton Game. Pretty interesting, actually. I would say it is closest, if anybody has played Super Meat Boy, meets a bullet hell shooter. You play as a little triangle guy trying to, well, as in the title, Little Triangle, trying to save your world by rescuing little guys that are little other little triangles and citizens of the world, and collecting, you know, a little, it's a bit of a collectathon as well, so you're collecting little items that you find throughout the levels. It starts out pretty easy, giving you tutorials on how to jump, and then there's a double jump factor, and basically showing you that there's secret areas in each level that you can get to. And as you get to the end, it tallies up everything you've collected and all the people that you've saved and the bonus areas you've found, and then gives you a total score. And going through everything, you're on a linear path on a sort of world map similar to like a Mario 3 or a Mario World. It's pretty neat. It's, I would say, it gets more and more difficult as you go because it has a sliding scale of difficulty that slowly amps it up. So it'll introduce one new factor of maybe moving platforms. Then it'll introduce moving platforms that fall. Then it'll introduce a giant buzzsaw that follows you throughout the level, which gets trickier and trickier and trickier. But the one thing that I liked about this compared to, let's say, a Super Meat Boy, which is like a one-hit kill game, is you start out with 3 hearts, and once those hearts are depleted, that's when you die. So you can have a few hits. And at certain points through each level, you find a checkpoint, which is, I guess, a save point. But when you die, if you do get knocked out, that's where you start back again, and you start with your full set of hearts. If you die, say, 3 or 4 or 5 times, you'll start to notice that you lose a heart each time you continue, until you get down to the point where you're just surviving with 0 extra hearts. So it does reward you for getting better as you go, but doesn't punish you for being, say, a noob like me that just can't do it. Because I'll tell you, this game is pretty hard. It's definitely worth picking up for the Switch if you want something that you can just quick play on the go. It's right now sitting at about $15 to $20, depending on if you're on the Canadian or American Nintendo store. So check it out, Little Triangle.
You've never been out of college. You don't know what it's like out there. I've worked in the private sector. They expect results.
News on the mark!
And that was Little Triangle. Definitely a game you should definitely consider checking out if, like I said, if you're a fan of Super Meat Boy and that sort of insanely hard platformer for the sake of being hard.
With just a little bit of extra things, like you have more than one hit before you die.
Exactly, which I think is definitely a bonus if you don't want to punch your screen or throw your Switch across the room.
Platformers remind me every day that I am terrible at video games.
I used to be good at platformers back in the Nintendo and Super Nintendo days. Not so much anymore.
Unless it's Kirby, and then nobody can die.
I used to think I was amazing at video games when I was a kid, and then I realized that I was always using Game Genie and Game Shark for shit, and now I know I suck.
I feel the exact same way. Actually, before I left to come down here, I was installing Rad Rogers, and I'm so apprehensive about playing that game because it is a platformer, and I suck at platformers. But here, I'll try it.
All right, so this segment, normally we would be filled with the news of the week and discussing what happened in the world of nerd, geek, and dork. But we lost one of our own this past week, and we're dedicating this entire segment, basically this entire show, so put this in the show notes, Alex, to Professor Dr. Stephen Hawking, who was died this past week at the age of 75. He died on March 14th on Pi Day, also Albert Einstein's birthday. This guy was very important to the field of cosmology. Basically, the guy who discovered Hawking radiation, which is radiation discovered in and around black holes, and a bunch of math theories I can't even begin to describe to you, but he also helped refine some stuff around the Big Bang Theory, which he was on at one point in pop culture. He met Sheldon.
It basically, what he did, in a nutshell, very simply, was made it cool to learn about crazy theoretical physics. Like, that was something that nobody ever thought of. He brought it into the mainstream with his books.
Well, yeah. I mean, he wrote A Brief History of Time, I think, in the 70s. And here's the thing. He was a slacker. In Cambridge University, where he studied, at the age of 20, he was described as he only studied 1,000 hours, so maybe an hour per day. And he's like, I don't care. And his professors were wondering if he was going to make it through. And he wanted to go to the next level with his studies. And he basically said, look, you're either going to give me the person that I want, or I'm going to be here for a while longer. And you don't want that.
I feel like that is a inherent trait for a genius.
Yeah, for the super intelligent.
For the super intelligent. The super intelligent tend to be underachievers and, I guess, for lack of a better term, slackers. Because they
find
the work
boring.
They find the work boring, and they're so beyond us that that we just everything seems beneath them. And I'm not saying that of Stephen Hawking, but at the same time, I can see where it would come from.
Well, yeah, it's crazy. I mean, this is a guy, he would have bets with other cosmologists, like saying, I can prove your theory wrong, stuff like that. And he accomplished so much in the 70s and 80s. Like I said, Hawking radiation was a very big discovery. Redefining how the Big Bang worked, basically, is it the theory of continuing expansion? Was the universe always here? Was it born into existence? And he was an atheist, but he never discounted the possibility of a god. He himself just didn't believe.
I also wonder, like, thinking of his cultural impact, even on creative things, is it any wonder Professor X is a guy confined to a chair that uses his mind to basically be one of the smartest
people. Yeah, yeah.
It's look at that. Look at how he's influenced. And I don't know which came first, but it's right around
Professor
the same
X
time.
Would have come first because he was, I think the X-Men was 1963. Hawking didn't get really sick until the late 60s, early 70s. Something like that, yeah. Because Hawking wasn't always in the chair. He developed ALS, aka
Lou Gehrig's disease. I'm willing to bet most people don't realize that he was British.
Yeah,
because the Microsoft Sam voice, he chose an American voice because he thought that that was a dialect of English that was more universal.
And he chose to keep that that same voice, that same Microsoft Sam, throughout his entire life, despite technology for artificial voices improving, because it became synonymous with himself.
Yeah,
it became
his
voice.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of neat. There was actually a documentary I watched on YouTube, which was a PBS documentary about Stephen Hawking. Just look it up, Stephen Hawking documentary. It's the top result. How the software has evolved over the years. Basically, how it decides what's the next word he should predict, because he can only type with his hand and his toes.
And then it became just a blink of his eye.
Yeah, you could see the device attached to his glasses that could read where his eyes were looking, and that helped him make those decisions.
Like, it's crazy, man. It takes a long time for him to communicate effectively, and this was especially troubling when he another book he did during the 80s took 4 years to get made because there's a problem in communicating. It's not like he can write the book himself. He has to talk to his nurses and his publisher to help make this book happen.
So he was only twice as fast as George R. R. Martin.
Yes.
pretty much. But even by the end, like, it became so scripted in the last few years. Like, when he opened up the Perimeter Institute at the University of Waterloo up here, like, right local, his lectures were not really lectures. Like, you couldn't communicate. He'd sit at the front, and they would play a pre-recorded message. Mm-hmm. And what they would do to get around it was, if you had questions for him, you had to submit them 2 weeks ahead. And then they would take those pre-selected things, and he would answer those questions specifically. So this was not a case of anybody being able to ever ask something on the fly for him.
It would take, like, 5 minutes.
Basically, in the last 20 years, he had no movement other than his eye twitching.
Which is crazy.
In his appearances on many pop culture shows, he was on... I can't remember what it was, but it's...
Wasn't he on TNG or Voyager?
He was on Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 6, the last episode.
First episode.
He was on
Parody
News Program. Oh, right. John Oliver, I think it was. He was on John Oliver's show.
Yeah, he did appear with John Oliver, yeah.
He was the first
guest. A lot of those appearances that he made were all pre-scripted ahead of time, so he's not actually having that live dialogue with John Oliver. He's just going through the recorded responses there. Mm-hmm. They're still entertaining. I'm sure those are his actual responses when the bit was made for him, but he's not saying it live. It's all done much, much in advance.
There was actually a pretty funny bit he did with Conan O'Brien in the 90s. I guess Jim Carrey was promoting Dumb and Dumber, and he made Jim Carrey look like a huge astrophysics fan, and he was making fun of... Stephen Hawking was making fun of the audience. He's like, Jim, don't bother to explain it to them. They have their... pea brains, but I must go and finish Dumb and Dumber now. And there's a very famous photo of Jim Carrey. He was afraid to ask Hawking this. He's like, can I get a picture with you? He's like, what do you mean? Can I make it look like your wheelchair is running over my foot? And Hawking was such a huge fan. He's like, absolutely. And just did that with him, which I think Hawking was very good to everybody around him in public appearances. He'd always look as happy as he could. Although his personal life was not as rosy as you may think, because he was married twice, and he did have children, which is something kind of cool. His kids still are alive today. But evidently, he wasn't the nicest guy to be married to, and you can imagine the stress of having ALS, watching it progressively take your body down over time, and having to constantly rely on outside nurses and doctors, etc., etc. There was even... a domestic case involving him in the mid-2000s where he was potentially being abused. But that was politely and quietly dropped. So I guess that got resolved.
And you've got to imagine this. There's, when you're somebody that smart, like we've talked about, there's an ego involved with that when you're constantly told you're the smartest person out there. That's, at the same time, you're dealing with the fact that you're slowly... He was physically crippled to the point where he could not do anything. So he had all the time in the world to think his thoughts and do his theorems, but at the same time, the frustration involved with not being able to move anything. So it's one of those cases where you can see how maybe there would be some resentment or attitude happening behind the scenes. So, I mean, you can't blame somebody for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, man, you've been told your entire life you are one of the most brilliant minds on the entire planet.
And at the same time, you're being told that you have 2 to 3 years to live, and then you're after that 3 years, you're still alive, but you have to wonder, how long do I actually have? So every day you're thinking,
there's a character with that right now on the Flash TV show. I can't remember the name of the villain. It'll come to me later, but he's basically a guy in a chair, and he starts stealing people's bodies. Putting his minds in other people's bodies. And of course, that where do you think they get the idea of the most brilliant man on the planet from, who ends up contracting a muscular disease, and then they went with supervillain, whereas Hawking went a little more Professor X. What he tried to do.
I find it strange that Stephen Hawking he had his diagnosis. He had a diagnosis that he wouldn't live to this point and this point and this point. That is not an uncommon thing. I know two people who have been given short life expectancies who have survived beyond just impossible odds. One just had her 30th birthday. The other is the oldest person who survives Barth syndrome. So I feel like it's not an uncommon thing to be told you're not going to live and beat those odds.
The only thing with him is, with ALS, you are generally given 2 to 3 years.
And especially very during true. The 60s and 70s.
He lived 25 times the diagnosis. Not two times. 25 times longer than they expected he was going to live. Don't quote me, but I believe he's in the Guinness Book or in the running for the longest living patient with that disease, period.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ever. And part of that is all the companies, like his chair, everything was donated. He was part of stem cell research. Like, everything that any company in the world could do to make him live longer, they pumped money into. They mm-hmm. experimented with it because the idea was you don't want to lose somebody that big. Can you think of anybody younger than him that we've listed as the most brilliant or in the top category? You can't think of anybody. Neil deGrasse Tyson is the most known astrophysicist outside of him. But that's because he knows how to talk to the general public. He's like Bill Nye if he was cool.
he's relatable specifically for astrophysics in a very yes, every
but we
narrow
don't but can you name the next smartest person?
No.
Michio the Japanese guy from
Michio Kaku
the planets. Carl
yeah, but Sagan. Well, Michio Kaku is the guy he did a lot of stuff on
Neil deGrasse Tyson?
Yeah. Those guys but are they in the same league?
Since Carl Sagan,
but he's dead.
Yeah.
I mean living. There's been a lot of debate on social media. It's like, oh, why are we always saying that these men are the most brilliant people and there's women? True. I can't name a person. Like, men or women, anything in between. I can't name a single person. Yeah,
as pop culture relevancy, the smart people you think of, Hawking, Einstein, Newton.
Yep.
And those would be what you think, like Nikola Tesla.
Yeah.
You think they're all dead. Hawking was the last one.
Yeah. And who is the greatest mind of the 21st century?
Yeah.
That's a damn good question.
Yeah. He was, but who's it going to be now?
Yeah, who is it now? Exactly.
And it's not a matter of putting him up on a pedestal. It's just, do we even know anybody else? Has anybody else ever been touted as that?
Or not that unless you're a super nerd or a dork and follow these communities. But if you ask the average person on the street, you say, who's Hawking? The guy in the chair.
Exactly.
Smart guy. No one knows. You're right. Who's the greatest mind right now? In fact, let us know. Feedback at thisweekingeek.net. Tell us. I'm genuinely curious to hear. We did touch upon, like I said, his pop culture appearances. He's done so much for the world of mathematics, astrophysics, theoretical physics. Like I said, discovered so much and expanded our understanding of the universe. In fact, I was mentioning this on Twitter. Stephen Hawking made math beautiful to me, and I don't understand math. I openly admit I'm an idiot with that type of stuff, but math is the divine language of the universe. Knowledge is power, and to see a mind like this create something so cool. He even wrote books, like I said, A Brief History of Time. He even wrote an even briefer History of Time, which is meant for the layman. There's movies where I think Benedict Cumberbatch plays him when he was very young.
That was Alan Turing.
You sure?
Yes. This was okay. Eddie Redmayne.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Theory of Everything.
They came out the exact same time.
Yeah.
So people confused the movies.
Okay.
One was about the Turing world, the first computer, and one is about Hawking.
Okay, because I saw in that PBS documentary they interviewed Cumberbatch. So I guess. Okay.
Actually, no. You're right. There was a 2004. Like, before Benedict Cumberbatch became mainstream.
Was it a BBC movie or
I
something?
I believe so, yes. He did play a young Stephen Hawking. You're right.
Probably why it added to the confusion of everything.
Well, because it was all around the same time. But I saw that, the Eddie Redmayne one, where he won the award for it. I saw that in theaters, and looking at his life, it's like, you know what? Of course it was embellished for being a movie, and you're going to exaggerate certain aspects of it. But the idea is, like, he he dealt with his ailment as well as you could have hoped for.
Yeah.
And threw himself into work, and at the same time, you know, had his ups and downs as he went, but it's almost like, had it happened all at once where he was completely disabled mm-hmm. right away,
he would have been
it probably would have crushed him, and he would have, but I think because it was so slow progressing, he was able to continue his work, and there was always something to move forward with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like he never wanted his mind to stop working.
I honestly think through sheer will, he went longer.
Like in the documentary, he talks about he didn't want to slow down because he didn't know how much time he had left, and he wanted to prove all these cosmological theories and theorems. Well,
and when he was wrong, and when he would lose, like he always had a standing bet that was like a dollar or something.
Yeah, something like that. And he admitted several losses. He's like, "Yeah, I screwed up. You're right." It may come out like 20 years later, but still, he was willing to admit when he was wrong. Which I think is a great thing, especially when you're considered to be the smartest man in the world, to say, no, I screwed up.
It's an important part of the scientific process. The scientific method is you don't try to prove yourself right. You try to prove yourself and others wrong, because once you've exhausted all the wrong, all you're left with is the right.
Exactly.
I feel like that's one of the reasons why he is probably one of the last best bastions of scientific theory that we had. Now it's all going to be a shit show of he said, she said.
It's not the science of what we know, it's the science of what we feel.
Exactly.
Mind you, Hawking did say some pretty weird stuff in his later years, such as
we need
the aliens. He's openly said we need to be very careful with what we're sending out into the cosmos. And he cited the Native Americans versus the Americans or / British. He's like, it didn't work out too well for the natives. And he's got a point. Let's just say. He's even talked about self-replicating robots. I think I've covered this on Twig before.
Yeah.
Where he talked about the Grey Goose scenario is not necessarily impossible.
So I just want to confirm, was the theory he's saying is that when aliens come, they're going to be so technologically advanced, they're just going to colonize us, like colonial America did.
More of they'll avoid us. They'll either avoid us because we're insignificant and not worth it.
Okay.
Two, they'll come, and it won't be that situation. If somebody can come across the cosmos in a way that we don't think is even possible, then we're so insignificant. They'll just come here, press a button, and we'll all die. And they'll just go, we need this planet for resources. Let the bugs try to fight us, and they'll swat us away like we're nothing. We're flies.
Right.
History has shown that when a technologically superior group meets a technologically inferior group, it does not go very well for the inferior group.
Yeah, it doesn't work out too well for my people.
Or that they'll come, and we won't even know they're here because they might not even be a form we can see or hear or touch or feel.
So yeah, because there's even theories, or talks anyway, about how alien life may not be biological. It could be robotic. We may not even know. It could be microscopic.
So, but just essentially that why would... His idea is, why would we want to see other life? Because the other life that we would want to see that would be like us would also be of a similar intelligence that couldn't even make it across the universe anyway.
Right.
So the intelligence that does get here is probably malevolent.
Yeah, and I have no desire to be wiped up by the Borg or xenomorphs. Or
I don't know. I think that'd be kind of cool.
Or one last thing I'd like to say about it myself is, how do we know that 99% of what he said isn't complete bullshit, but we're just too dumb to know that he's not making it up? here's my math, and nobody else can solve. Like, it'd be like us doing basic arithmetic and giving it to a 4-year-old to do, and they're like, wow, he's really smart. Like, how do we know that it's just, he's not brilliant, he's just a little bit smarter than the rest of us. So we don't know, right? Because we're all dum-dums.
It's a very good question.
He could be playing the long con.
It'll be 100 years before we figure out one thing.
You are all stupid.
Yeah.
But we are going to throw things over to our continuing celebration of GenreCon, which happened in Guelph towards the end of February. And Tristan, what do you got for us this week?
I talked with Sean Ward of the Sean Ward Show, and it's amazing. He's got a million subscribers, more than a million now. It's a super popular cosplay parody show.
Yeah, he is the cosplay parody show on YouTube. He's a guy from Toronto. I've known him for a number of years. Actually, as we record this show, He's at the Toronto Comic Con right now, doing, I'm sure, some wonderful stuff with the Toronto cosplayers.
He gave me a new nickname. I'm now Tristizzle Wink Wizzle.
So stay tuned for that, guys. We'll be back here right here on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
It's 911 in the morning and 1-900 in the evening. The Phone Sex EMS Dispatcher wins Six Sad World Return.
GenreCon 2018 in Guelph, Ontario is a convention that gathers people of all walks of geek life and brings them together in a smaller convention that retains a feeling of community and closeness that sometimes gets lost in the big comic cons. I spent a weekend exploring the convention and met all sorts of interesting people. Two such interesting people were Mackenzie Smith, also known as Bubbles Cosplay, and Sean Ward of The Sean Ward Show. Mackenzie was dressed up as a cosplay rendition of the Riddler and had some good advice for cosplayers looking to expand their pool to pull costume ideas from, and talked a bit about working on The Sean Ward Show. So I am the guy that's supposed to be talking with Sean Ward here, but first I want to talk with the Riddler.
Mackenzie, or Bubbles, I guess.
How long have you been doing the cosplay thing for?
I started cosplaying kind of by accident in 2010, and that was for a graphic novel called Bad Kids Go to Hell, and that was a million years ago. And then since then, I have been working with different websites and different projects, and then I started working with Sean for the Sean Ward Show on YouTube, and since then we've been working together for about 4 or 5 years continuously.
Awesome. So you seem to have a lot of success. I know Sean Ward's really popular on YouTube. So,
yeah. We actually just hit over 1 million subscribers before Christmas, which is really, really exciting. And I have just kind of been putting together, this is a couple of years in the making, nothing too big, but I'm a by day professional dancer and then work with the channel and do cosplay for fun.
Awesome. Do you have any advice for cosplayers just getting into the scene or people who are trying to grow themselves as a brand or as a person?
Absolutely. I would say, first off, don't stress if you don't know how to make things, because I don't. I don't know how to sew. I don't really, I kind of put things together, and find yourself a good group of humans that you can be with, and you can create your own community, because there's a lot of people that like to occasionally like to cut each other down, and if you find the people that build each other up, it makes cosplaying the best experience.
Awesome. Is there any specific advice for people who are trying to do cosplays like you are today?
Cosplay. Oh yeah. I would just say kind of wing it. At least that's what I did. I've done, for the most part, I just like to take the color scheme of the character and kind of go off of that. And also finding like concept art online. A lot of artists draw up like a Lady Riddler or like a bat, not a Batgirl, because that already exists, but... A
little different.
Yeah, but like cosplay things, there's concept art all over the internet, and if you just find pictures that inspire you, which is what I do, it's a lot easier, and if anyone talks, can I swear?
Yeah.
If anyone talks shit, then you can just say, see you later, because that's the whole point of cosplay to me, is that you can create whatever you want. It doesn't have to be specific to any particular comic book or movie or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Is there any other projects you have coming up? Anything special in the works?
Yeah, actually, we're going to be at Merch Comic Con, which is March, 15th? 16th to the 18th, I think.
The March Comic Con?
Yeah.
16th to 18th.
We'll be there also with the show. I'll have some stuff. A bunch of our cast members will have their products there. And it's going to be a party. And the 1 million subscribers party. Oh, my goodness. So we hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube, and that's when we're going to be throwing our celebration party. It's going to be at Power... Is it going to be at Power Up?
Yeah, with Pink City.
Power Up, we're collaborating with Pink City, which is a clothing line. I don't know if you...
Vaguely familiar
They're
with
awesome.
That.
They're awesome. So definitely come and check us out at March Comic Con. For sure, I know we'll be at Fan Expo again. And until then, I'm not 100% sure, but we're always popping up doing a bunch of really exciting things.
Awesome. Sounds like you got a lot planned.
It's been a cool year. It's been a really exciting year. So a lot of cool stuff has happened.
All right, a huge thank you for your time today.
Of course. My pleasure. Check me out on Instagram. I got
all those Instagram, Twitters, and everything else.
Social medias. Look on the interwebs.
The interwebs?
Yeah, for us.
The Sean Ward Show describes itself as a fan parody series about superheroes, comics, and Comic-Con culture. The Sean Ward Show YouTube channel recently celebrated an important milestone, reaching 1 million subscribers, and as of recording, they've reached over 1.2 million subscribers. I asked Sean for some insight into how to make a career out of YouTube. I'm here with Sean Ward from The Sean Ward Show. Just hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube. That's a huge accomplishment. How does it feel to hit that big milestone?
Dude, I'll tell you, it feels amazing because there was once a time when I was like, oh, if we could just be one of those channels that maybe has like 100,000 subscribers. That's all I need in life is to like, you know, have that kind of, even if it's small, just have the kind of like loyal audience, and we'll be okay if we can just do that. And then it just kept soaring, and now 1 million is just a milestone that I dared even not to dream of at a certain point. It's crazy.
You have a panel coming up a little bit later today. What kind of things can we expect to hear at that panel?
A lot of stuff about YouTube. A lot of people have a lot of questions about it because it's hot in the media. Everything we're hearing about controversies and the changes that they're making to the algorithm and to how they allow people to monetize their videos. And it can be a headache. For someone like me who's experienced, it can be such a nightmare trying to navigate that. So I think we're going to get a lot of questions about that. And then also just sharing a lot of our experiences of, like, you know, how we've kind of found our voice and developed our format and some of the adventures we get into.
Awesome. Do you have any thoughts on over the last year, YouTube's gone through two stages of the adpocalypse, as it's known. How has that affected you in any way?
Well, actually, I'll tell you how it's affected me. A couple of the videos that we do, I think 9 videos right now, have been hit with that not suitable for all advertisers. And maybe, you know, one of them, maybe the girl's butt is showing in a certain part, so okay, I'll give you that one. But then there's like other ones that are just totally innocent, and I have absolutely no idea what even is the basis for that decision. And that's part of it too, is just like, they won't ever tell you like specifically what was that X factor.
Yeah.
They'll say, well, I refer you to the terms, and we laid it out in this long document. It's all, just look at that. It's like, okay, whatever. So, I mean, it's a really tough thing to try to like toe the line and figure out what you can and can't do. Anybody who's just getting started with it now, it's just getting more and more challenging to get going with it. But, I tell people all the time now that, like, treat YouTube like it's, you know, there to advertise your Patreon or there to do other things and draw attention to your other platforms. And then if it takes off because of its own thing, then that's almost a bonus at that point, because it's just so competitive and so much harder all the time to build it into a business.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. Even just a couple of months ago, or just over 1 month ago, they made the big change for a lot of smaller channels. You have to have 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 hours of content viewed in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
Do you think that's really going to deter a lot of the smaller YouTubers from continuing? Do you think it's going to push people away from starting a YouTube channel?
I think that's a bigger problem with like optics and the kind of thing that it makes people feel. Because the issue is that when you're talking about numbers at that level, you're not even getting paid yet. YouTube doesn't pay you until they owe you over $100, and you haven't made $100 yet at that point. So it's not really like the effect to creators. Nothing changes. So it's just kind of internal rules for them. Sometimes it makes people feel disheartened, and sometimes it makes people feel like it's more of an uphill climb. But at the end of the day, I mean, my message has always been, before YouTube even, when I was doing comics and selling them on the street, the message has always been to just like be creating content and be prolific with it and just keep on doing it till something happens. And you're never going to know what's going to happen, and you're never going to know what's going to be the thing that you made that goes big for you, which is why it's more important to just keep making stuff and just keep putting it out there. YouTube or comics or whatever you want to do, you know what I mean?
Is there any advice for people who are looking to make a full-time career out of this? Outside YouTube, what would you say is the biggest thing that you'd find success with just getting started?
Well, I've always found that for me personally, there's a lot to be said for having a physical product for sale. So like in my case, it was before YouTube was doing anything for me, it was comic books, right? So I'd make my own comic books.
Yeah.
And I was always trying to find like new and unique places to go show my comic books to people where they would stand out. And so if any kind of vehicle, whether it's a comic book or a CD or a piece of paper or a drawing or whatever, I think if you can have something to sell that you can position in some unique way or put it in a give it a platform where you ordinarily wouldn't find that kind of thing, so you can stand out more. And then I've seen a lot of people have great success with these new platforms like Patreon and stuff like this. So the opportunities to make money online are growing more plentiful all the time, mm-hmm. but there's just so many people out there doing it that it can feel harder than ever to make it happen. But it's like persistence and dedication. There's never, ever been any substitute for that. And so that's just always been the answer. It's always going to be the answer.
Awesome. So what does the future hold for you? What's the next 12 months look like for the Sean Ward Show?
Well, actually, just keeping on making these videos and getting them out there, and people keep watching them. In 2018, we're actually putting a new focus on this longer format, 10 minutes plus. Every time one of these big Marvel and DC movies comes out, we go see it on the Thursday night preview night, the fan preview night. We haul ass to get a script done over the weekend, and then we get into the studio on the Sunday or the Monday to shoot the video. Breakneck pace edit it to have it up for the following Friday. And this is the challenge we've set out for ourselves this year, is to make these epic parody versions of all of the big movies that come out. So we're ready for this to be a very busy year, because there's more of these movies coming out than ever. But I mean, this thing of superhero movies is just, my entire life has been the thing that I care the most about. And it just, like, I put a Spider-Man Homecoming the other night, and it gives me the same tingle up my spine, even though I've seen it a bunch of times, you know what I mean? And so just this thing that lets me live in this world and basically be like a professional superhero fan, I mean, I definitely feel like the most blessed guy ever to be able to do this.
Yeah, that's a real lucky position you got yourself in. And it's not just luck, it's a lot of hard work, it's a lot of effort and persistence, like you said.
Yeah, and so. It's a big team effort, you know? Like, my name's on the channel, but this is very much a group effort, and we got, like, this team that's at the core of it that's, like, we've had a lot of people come and go, but the people who are, like, the most rock-solid people, the kindest people, the most beautiful people, inside and out. Like, I love these teammates that we got, and there's a core at the center of the thing that is what keeps it going, and it is what people respond to. And when we show up to stuff like, when we come to the March Comic Con and we got everybody there, we even got this collaborator from Florida who's coming up for that one, it's going to be insane.
Alright, thank you very much for your time. Was there anything else you wanted to share?
Oh, I mean, just without trying to be funny here, I'll just give you an honest and sincere message to anybody who's listening, to just, like, really hammer home that message that, like, trying to have a go at doing something creative for a living is really, really, really tough. But it's like life is always asking you how bad you want it, and you've always got to be stepping up to that challenge and answering that question. And the more stuff you make and the quicker you can turn stuff around and get it out there, the more chances there are that something you've made could catch on and go big. And it could be the thing you just made, it could be the thing you made a year ago. You never know what it's going to be. So the key is to not slave over and try to just, you know, make one thing perfect, but to be prolific and just get a lot of stuff out there. You're going to improve faster, you're going to find your voice faster, and then eventually something's going to just start clicking for you.
Thank you so much for the advice. This is some great advice from Sean Ward from the Sean Ward Show. Just hit 1 million subscribers on YouTube. I have been Mr. Tristizzle Winkwizzle from thisweekingeek.net. GenreCon was a great learning experience for me, and there was knowledge to be gained about so many different interests, it's almost overwhelming. But if you find something that interests you at a convention, the opportunity is right there to dive in head first. Thank you to Mackenzie Smith and Sean Ward for sharing their advice and their time. You can find links to their social media in the show description, and check out the Sean Ward Show on YouTube. I'm Mr. Christopher, and you're listening to This Week in Geek on thisweekingeek.net.
Something hinky's definitely going on here, and it's up to you and I to find out what it is.
Hinky? Yeah, it's a word.
In what dictionary?
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Thank you, Tristan, and thank you, Sean Ward, and everybody else who's been participating in our GenreCon coverage as we continue here on Twig. And as, of course, you can guess, it's time for the weird, the fucked up, the strange, the downright friggin' bizarre. It's weird news. I'm going to start things off this week and then proceed on my left. This week, I'm going to talk to you about a guy whose head is full of air. You might be wondering, what the hell am I talking about? Well, an elderly man turned up to an emergency department in Northern Ireland after a series of falls and stunned doctors who found a huge air-filled cavity where part of his brain should have been. So this 84-year-old man was referred to A&E after several months of feeling unsteady on his feet and experiencing falls, and 3 days of weakness in his left arm and leg. So the details that were published in a medical journal reveal that blood tests showed nothing out of the ordinary. There were no signs of facial weakness, so he wasn't, as Alex might say, stroked out. He didn't have any speech problems or confusion.
I would say stroked out.
You really would, because you're an evil, evil man.
Good Lord.
But when
I'd say he's all stroked and fucked up. He's got the gimp face.
Oh my
stroke
God.
Stroke gimmick, stroke face.
When the man was given a CT and MRI brain scans, the medical team discovered an air-filled cavity measuring 9 centimeters in his frontal lobe. They also found a benign bone tumor, which is essentially a bony growth within his nasal tissues.
I've got a bony growth.
So what had happened is this bone growth had been growing steadily over time, put pressure on the base of his skull, with causing a small erosion. And subsequently, because air goes through your sinuses, air is able to move through this and through the erosion into the skull. The air can get in, but it can't get back out again. So I'm actually going to show a picture of this to the room, and you can see how big the hole was.
Oh, God.
That's a good chunk of his brain.
Oh, my God. You know what that reminds me of?
What?
There was a was it on Maury or one of these shows in the 90s? The kid that was shot in the head, and then they had removed a significant portion of his brain, and it was basically he had this caved-in... It looked like a deflated balloon side of his
head.
And the idea was, going on the show was, because no medical insurance, it was to get prosthetic put in. I didn't realize your brain could operate with, like, 30% of it scooped out.
Now, here's the weird thing. The story continues on. When the brain images appear as if part of that brain was gone, no, the brain wasn't gone. It was compressed. So as the pressure builds, the wall of the skull isn't going to move, so the brain has to. So the patient was offered the option of surgery to release the pressure on the brain, fix the erosion, and remove the bone growth, but decided to not do it given the possible risk. It's a big surgery for anyone to consider at any stage of their life. So while the authors note the patient's left side weakness has gone away after 12 weeks, what happens next is far from certain. In theory, the brain could possibly absorb or the body could reabsorb some of the air, but it could get worse, we just don't know, adding the risk of infection or stroke. He actually sustained a small stroke, possibly due to the pressure effect over time, and there is, I suppose, a risk of that happening again. That is terrifying, to think that a small bone growth could do this and put almost all this air pressure in your brain.
It doesn't surprise me, because like what's amazing to me is how delicate the brain is, yet how durable.
Yeah.
It has a weird mix of like a little bit of water, like even we're talking... Like, a fingernail's worth of blood in the brain is enough to send you to dementia and die. Yet, your brain can compress with air like that.
And you can see things on I Shouldn't Be Alive, where someone's got a pull through the head.
Or like the one I talked about, they can scoop out 30 or 40% of your brain, and it'll rewire itself and work.
It's just, if that's very specific part of the brain
is damaged. As long as the brain stem is there, and the part of the front is there, a part of the top, I think the front of the bottom, you can go, like, you'll lose certain features. There'll be some cognitive function that goes down, but it's amazing how durable the brain
rebuilds itself.
Yet all it takes is a little air bubble to kill you.
Yeah, or it's so bizarre.
Or something.
Yeah. Something in just the wrong spot. It's the tiniest little thing, and you're dead. But this massive trauma to this other part, you're okay.
Yeah, like I said, a milliliter of blood touches a bad part of the brainstem, and you can no longer use your leg.
When my dad, my grandfather rather, was put in the hospital a couple years ago, he was having like memory problems and everything else, and we're like, what the fuck is wrong with him? He had a stroke in the backyard, and he had to crawl himself over my like an acre on a wheelbarrow, just pulling himself forward. So I had to take him to the hospital. There's a lot more of the story I'm leaving out, but the medical part of it is I took him to the hospital, and the doctor was like, well, we can't find anything wrong with him. What do you want us to do? I'm like, run more goddamn tests. So we took him down to London. He was airlifted. They removed the amount of 2 cans of Coke of blood on his brain. And within like a month,
crazy.
He's fine.
Well, the crazy thing is, that happens, but it could, again, be a milliliter in the wrong spot.
Yeah,
exactly.
It's weird. The human brain can do some incredible things. So, thankfully, this old man is still alive, but what happens next is anyone's guess. Sure.
I need that like a hole in the head.
Speaking of head. Oh, I didn't realize we were doing weird news. I thought we were taking up our entire news on the fly, so I spent the last 2 minutes Googling weird news, and I managed to find something interesting.
Cool.
March 14th was not only Pi Day and not only the day that Stephen Hawking passed, but it was also International Steak and a Blowjob Day.
Yes, what? It is.
Had anyone ever heard of this? Yeah, I know. Had anyone ever heard of this beforehand?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That idea.
Okay, I had...
long-standing tradition.
apparently so. I did not know about this, nor... nor do I remember eating steak or getting a blowjob on that day. However, apparently a restaurant in Nova Scotia actively promoted Steak and a Blowjob Day on their Facebook page. And it has been getting a serious backlash from an international community. He pretty much said, "Ladies, blow your man after they come to... to our restaurant to have a steak and in
kiss fish there and all, who cares?
Oh, I get it. Take it with a grain of salt, but at the same time, in this day and age, probably not the most appropriate thing we should be saying to potential customers. There's been a big backlash, but again, I did not realize this day exists. Apparently, in 2014, Christina Aguilera was like, "Yeah, ladies, blow your man after steak."
So,
congratulations on alienating your customers, and congratulations to all the men who had a fine double A and
eat some beef double A and then some pork.
Yeah. Oh boy,
that's what I could find in very short notice.
Well, you see, I'm actually kind of surprised, especially in this era of you don't know what you can say, what you can't say, and we're all very PC. I am very surprised that even made it as far as their Facebook page. I'm actually surprised someone in the back room of the management didn't say, "Hey, but it's
fine." I don't think this is a place that has management.
And everything out east, people work on a different schedule, different time. There's a different attitude. The problem is when it does reach a wide audience is when you get people complaining. You know, was there really any harm done with this? No. But remember, Canada is as progressive as we are, it wasn't that long ago that businesses weren't even allowed to be open on Sunday.
Because
the church mm-hmm. controlled it. So, like, it didn't matter what religion you were, you could practice any religion, but you couldn't work on a Sunday or go anywhere. Like, we're talking movie theaters wouldn't open. Nothing opened on Sunday.
How long ago was this?
About 30, 40 years ago.
I wish I had Sundays off.
So, like, it slowly widened up. Like when my grandparents in the 50s and 60s, nothing. Like, period, nothing. It wasn't until the early 70s when, like, you couldn't even go to... Remember, the liquor store wasn't open on Sundays until, like, the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's progressive. We're getting more and more... But you know what? At the same time, I think you should be able to say that if you want to say it. If that's what you want to market for your business, you go right ahead. You have to then be able to take it if somebody complains. But I don't think people should get overexcited.
It gets widespread, though. People share, right? Nothing is sacred anymore, especially as you're putting it online.
Especially if it's like a bar. You know what? Yeah. Maybe you're not a family restaurant. Who gives a shit then?
No, it seemed like this place was a steakhouse. But here's the thing. It's 4 days later. The post is still up. It's not like it's been removed. It's not like the owner had any slight remorse.
Good.
He's exercising his right to free speech. And it's not like it was something that would be insanely out there, you know?
That's like people that freak out thinking, call the cops on somebody here who's like, if a woman walks out topless. You know,
it's legal.
It's fully legal. You can't be arrested for that. It's not only is it legal, it's not like that they're going to say, go do it. But they'll say, if it's hot, do what you want because you're allowed to. But there are some people that will still go up in arms about it.
Absolutely.
It's weird. I'm pointing at you, Alex.
You're pointing at me. I was like, oh, he wants
it's
me.
Weird.
It's weird.
Points at Alex.
No, I don't know the Pitbull song very well. Okay, so from head...
Blowjobs.
Blowjobs to space DNA.
Oh, boy.
CNN and other outlets were reporting that... An astronaut's genes, gene expression, so basically the pattern of your genes that make up who you are, your DNA, no longer the same as his identical twin after spending a year in space.
Is that due to radiation?
No, they don't know what. Like, his DNA has changed. So,
that's weird.
Something that we didn't think was possible. Just being up there, maybe it's environmental factors due to...
radiation?
Pressure?
Pressure, radiation, for whatever reason, not being in
Earth's gravity well, maybe.
Like, he's in a clean, air-recycled environment. He's basically, like, in a clean room for
a
year.
Completely sterile.
People working in labs still go home at night and everything, so they don't expose. But if you're exposed for a year, could you have the same thing? Is it not having any bacteria around you but you would think there'd be some sort of factor in there that would be the altering thing. So all I can think of is cosmic rays.
That's my first thought.
Feels like the number one reason is a lot of additional exposure up there.
Yeah, it says here 93% of his genetic, or sorry, the astronaut Scott Kelly, 93% of his DNA returned to normal once he returned to Earth, but the rest didn't. So when they did did a test on him and his brother, they are actually no longer identical twins.
That's
so
crazy.
Now I have a question: did any part of him change as a result? Like, did he
maybe his
hair, color change or eye color change?
No,
or
I imagine skin color like change. Looking at pictures, like there's some pictures of them sitting there, but the vast majority of it is like his diet might be his diet would be different being up in space,
right?
Muscle mass would change. There's certain things, but that's stuff that you do on Earth that doesn't change your DNA.
Yeah, that's not a genetic effect.
So it has to be something cosmic.
Yeah, like it likely is cosmic rays, X-ray or gamma.
And of course, there's articles not debunking it, but saying, well, it didn't really change. No, there is a significant enough change that CNN and other news articles are talking about it. News outlets, sorry, are talking about it, but they don't know why, so they're going to study it.
What powers the ISS? Is it nuclear? Is it battery?
I would imagine it has to be nuclear and solar.
Yeah.
Because there'd have to be something for when the... like, I would imagine it has solar cells, because they have those big panels up there.
Yeah.
So, but there'd have to be nuclear power just to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
now,
they can't bring up
combustible
fuel.
We may be wrong on that, so we're not gonna pull it up on our phones and look while we're talking, but
classified documents?
Especially when it was initially built, the way it went up there has to be other... it won't be gasoline, it won't be combustion,
you hear one of those generators going.
And you're like, oh shit, get the coal. Like, you know, it has to be nuclear and then solar, because something that big can't rely on just solar. It probably runs on solar for day to day operations, but what happens when something goes wrong? There has to be a backup.
What happens when the sun goes out?
Pretty much.
Whenever it's cloudy, you know.
So I thought that, you know, here's a question.
What does that mean for space travel?
I'm thinking this is like Gundam. What was they called it? The
new types.
New types. Is it Gundam? Or here's a question: if his DNA is different, how is it just different from his brother, or is it different from humans in general? Is he no longer human? Does he have the same rights as somebody else who is human? How do you define what a human
that
is?
That will eventually come up.
To immediately say, how can we discriminate against this person?
Not how can we... No, but I'm thinking of political climates. How does that affect it? Because...
space has no rights due to
if
space.
If you're going to take it to me, think about this. People are born with things like wrong amount of chromosomes, and they end up with whatever certain diseases, or they end up with Down syndrome or something.
Mm-hmm.
Will he be classified as a
second class citizen
or a disease? Does that mean, because if you have Down syndrome or something else where you have mental capacity that isn't there, you don't have the power of attorney over yourself?
You
say that.
Ask yourself 200 years from now.
What if somebody lives up there for 10 years, not 1 year? What if somebody lives up there for 20 years and they come back and fundamentally something about their DNA changes to the point where they're no longer classified as a human?
Or they're a different class of human.
And even more, less political and more scientific, if you're up there long enough, say this effect is amplified if you're on a trip to Mars.
Yeah.
And your DNA changes so much that you're no longer able to propagate your genes with humans.
Precisely. Like, could this make you sterile? Could it mean that you have sex, but you can no longer, everything produces miscarriages?
Not even necessarily sterile, just no longer genetically compatible. You just, it won't
Like fucking a monkey.
Like a dog and a cat. They can't crossbreed. You can no longer crossbreed with other humans because your DNA is so different that you're...
That you can only crossbreed with somebody who else has been up in space. At that point, are you human? Are you Martian? Are you space? Are you...
Well, yeah.
You're Spacian.
Yeah, because like I said, the in space there are no technical rights, though, where you can't do certain things in space. Will Mars become a new territory?
I feel like, from a legal and political standpoint, if humanity ever remotely colonizes
space,
space or just planets in our own solar system like Mars, I feel like that once we get to that sort of political spectrum,
it
will have to be addressed. A and B, it will be addressed as these people are still human, unless of course, yeah, potentially that sort of DNA changes fundamentally changes the person. Good. Sorry, I just want to finish my thought.
Yeah.
When that sort of political spectrum changes, if these people are still human, let's just call it that. Whatever country or whatever human society that happens to call that and colonizes places, these people will be equals to us. I don't think unless they start growing like two or three or four heads or something like that.
Because ideally, but you really don't know until it happens.
That's true. Absolutely.
The first case to challenge it, saying you don't have the right. You've lived in space 20 years. You don't even have the same DNA as us. What gives you the right to vote?
It's true. We just watched a movie recently. Alex and I watched a movie called Downsizing. And one of the guys says, well, you're micronized. You don't even contribute to the economy anymore.
You're shrunk down. You contribute...
I gotta watch that movie.
It's really good.
You consume was like 1/200th of what a human is. So do you have a 1/200th of a vote?
Yeah, it's interesting. And like, he brings up Gundam and other sci-fi shows. I mean, they're considered new types or they're considered colonies. Yeah, do you have the same rights to vote in the country that you're originally from? These are questions that will have to be addressed at some point.
I feel like if you're born there and your paperwork says you're from there, and I mean, people who expatriate and still have like American citizenship and they go back to America, they don't lose their rights.
But at the same time, this effect is being... it's yet to be seen if how it manifests. Could it be something that it changes your perception of things? Does it change how
can
your
it
mind
be passed
works?
On? That's
could,
what I want.
Could you be susceptible to diseases, or could you be bringing back something from space that we don't know about? Not necessarily a biological, but something that is an aberration that does affect us. Like, could that cause sterility in entire people?
Who knows? Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much what we got this week in Nerd News. We decided to open the door to Satan's Pantry this week, and we decided to take on a pop culture snack this week. If you're familiar with Orange is the New Black, we'll be back here, right here, on Twig, the flagship of stupidity.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig! It's inedible!
Welcome back to Satan's Pantry, where we take a look down your grocer's aisle and find what is probably disgusting, gross, vile, but occasionally tasty, as we've discovered here on this show. And in today's edition of Satan's Pantry, we're taking a look at something called Takis. Now, I've seen these offered in gas stations before. I think Blair's mentioned they're popular on Orange is the New Black or something along those lines.
There's a whole season revolving around it.
That's amazing. So weird. Takis are like these corn snacks, and I've never had them before. So what flavor did we get?
It's a zesty tortilla flavor. It's in the green bag, so it's not the hot chili lime ones in the purple bag that are, like, super duper spicy. But they're, like, the medium of the tacky flavors.
Wow. Actually, even when you said that, we've just opened the bag. Lee has it across the room. I can smell them from here. So I'm waiting for these things to make my asshole fall out. So as off to a Satan's Pantry, I shall take the initial challenge. I have two here, and I'm going to smell them. Now, the texture of these things is kind of cool, actually. They're like rolled up Cheetos in a weird way. Smell, whoa, that was a mistake. I just shoved a bunch up my nose, not on purpose. Holy shit, that burns.
Okay. It looked like taquitos. I think I kind of get the name now.
It looks more like an illicit type of substance that you would roll.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a doobie. All right, let's try it.
It's a cornflower joint.
They're very hard. Vague taste of Doritos in there. Doritos and like a Frito, if I had like a baby.
The Fritos.
I was expecting it to be a lot hotter, actually. It's hotter when it goes up your nose.
Oh, wow. I see Lee over there. I left him with the bag. He's like, Takis, mine!
I like the texture of them, though. I will say that, but this, I don't know, it's kind of bland. I was expecting fire, like those spicy Cheetos that make my ass fall out.
That is the express purpose of why I did not buy the spicy ones.
No.
They do have a bite to the smell.
Mm-hmm.
That's quite a crunch. Oh, that's definitely a corn-based product. You can tell right away.
It's got a nice crunch to it, though. It's nice.
It smells like salsa.
Yeah, it's vaguely of salsa. Kind of like those salsa-flavored Doritos from like a couple years back.
Yeah, it's very much like Fritos in its texture. The shape of them really kind of gives it its uniqueness. The flavoring is not as strong as I was expecting, but it's still pleasant. I could definitely see me eating these regularly.
All right, Lee, and you're obviously just pounding them back. So.
Oh, I'm like 20 Takis in right now.
So that's the crunch you're hearing in your ears.
I've actually had Takis before. I have had the hot chili lime ones, which even in themselves, after a few of them, you kind of get used to. It's like the roulette Doritos, where there's one really spicy one, there's a bunch of other ones. But yeah, so sometimes you'll get a Taki that has like a bunch of the seasoning stuffed inside, and you're just like.
So maybe, you know what's weird? I haven't heard anybody talk about those roulette Doritos in years. I thought I just dreamed those up in a fever.
No. They were around. They were good. Because, you know, you'd be like, nacho cheese, super spicy. And I love them. These Takis here are, I mean, if there are two out of their four on their hotometer, it just says zesty. Two out of four, in my spiciness factor, this is more like a 0.2 out of 4.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of spice on mine, except for the one up my nose.
Yeah, no, it's good, it's tasty, but those chili lime Takis, man, they are just out of this world. They're good and hot, and, you know, I can't sit and eat a whole bag of those at once. I think the first bag I got, it took me about 3 or 4 sittings, and it was bigger than this one. It was probably about double the size, but usually I can pound them back, but the fact that I think they can fit more of these into a bag than you could your average Dorito, because they're big triangle shape. These are rolled up. They're rolled up Doritos.
I wonder how this would taste dipped in some queso.
Probably pretty good. I mean, this one specifically would probably be pretty good. It's got a mild, zesty flavor to it, and it wouldn't... the queso wouldn't ruin it, and it wouldn't ruin the queso. I think any of the hotter ones would be weird with some sort of extra sauce, like a ranch even, or something.
I think their shape alone would make them great for dipping in pretty much anything. Those jars you get when you're trying to dip a Dorito in there, you just end up with, like, sauce all over your hands. Yeah. It's kind of gross.
They break.
These are perfect.
If you want the best idea of what this tastes like and what the spiciness factor is, stick it in your mouth and just pull it out.
Good advice.
Stick it on your tongue.
Just in general.
Stick this phallic...
Oh boy.
Just stick it in your mouth and pull it out.
stick it in your mouth and pull it out. You'll get all of the seasoning on your tongue. And then you can swirl it around in your mouth.
Good life advice from
God.
You. Swirl the
and you can really tell how it tastes in your mouth after you swirl it around.
So stick it in your mouth, pull it out, and get it all over your tongue.
Exactly.
Words of wisdom.
I think Blair's dying here.
Razzers.
So what do you think of it, Blair?
There's no secret that I very much dislike Doritos, and that would be the last chip out of all the chip flavors that I would choose. But those are okay. I think it's more the corn taste that I'm not a huge fan of. So what I did first is I licked all the taste off the outside And then it tasted just like a plain tortilla chip. I'm really interested in how they get it the shape that they do. Like, rolled into a little roulade.
Maybe they do it on, like, that Food Factory show on, like, the Food Network or something.
How it's made.
How it's Takis. Made. Exactly. Takis. And certainly it must exist.
And I really did buy these for the boys, knowing that they would like them. And that I saw them on Orange is the New Black. And there is a whole season basically based around
it. It's not based around it, but it's a recurring theme in the season. It's almost like a gag joke.
This
most recent one. But I can understand why they're so popular. Before Orange is the New Black brought them into the light, I didn't even know this was a thing.
I'd seen them in gas stations when I was in the States, and that's about it.
Right, but they never really made their way up here to Canada.
Yeah,
and I think Tristan's right. It's just they're taquitos.
Yeah, it's just a short form of taquito.
Yeah. Which I have seen in the past, but I don't think I've ever had the pleasure.
I love taquitos. And they're good. So good.
I like taquitos.
I think this might be Lee's lunch here.
There we go. All right, well, that's going to do it for this edition of Satan's Pantry. Join us next time, where Alex will likely be bringing us something from the foreign food aisle. And I don't got a good feeling about this. So anyway, guys, we'll be back right here on Twig, right here on ThisWeekInGeek.net. I love you.
You're shit!
Yes, Chef, I am.
You are so shit, it's unbelievable.
We are taking a look at Justice League on Blu-ray, DVD, and digital from Warner Brothers Home Entertainment. Now, when this movie was announced, a lot of people were saying this has to compete with Marvel's Avengers and the MCU with its plethora of movies, world-building that's been going on for over 10 years now. And DC is going to be playing catch-up the entire time, and a lot of people were saying this movie has a lot to live up to. It's going to suck. It's Zack Snyder. Wow. This movie had everything going against it. And I was one of those voices. I'm fully willing to admit I was on the DC hate wagon. So when Warner Brothers sent me this Blu-ray to review, I fully went into this movie expecting to hate this thing. Was I wrong? Absolutely. I was actually pleasantly surprised by this movie, especially how much I genuinely enjoyed it. I laughed. It felt like I was actually seeing the Justice League come to life on the small screen. For me, I didn't get a chance to see this movie in theaters because of my health complications, but seeing this movie really brought a smile to my face. So the story of Justice League is as follows. Wonder Woman and Batman are gathering together allies as they have to fight a bad guy known as Steppenwolf, who's like related to Darkseid in some capacity. He's like a nephew or something. And Steppenwolf is trying to gather these things called Mother Boxes, which there are three on Earth, which will transform Earth into like Apocalyptian, which is where Steppenwolf is from. It basically bad. He wants to turn Earth into hell. And they need allies. So they gather together new people. They get The Flash, played by Ezra Miller, Jason Momoa as Aquaman, Ray Fisher as Cyborg, and eventually Superman comes back. Big surprise, he's on the cover. and it's a really cool movie for about its two-hour runtime. Now, you might be going into this expecting The Avengers. It's different enough that DC really kind of stands alone on this. And I was actually pleasantly surprised over the two-hour runtime how many cool moments there were. There's even a Green Lantern cameo at one point. There's just a lot of things to really enjoy here if you're a DC fan. And if more movies can be made like this, like Justice League, then I'm all in for the DC Expanded Universe to get better. Like The Batman, the Green Lantern movie, Aquaman standalone movie. There's a lot of things to really be excited about. Now, the Blu-ray itself does have a plethora of special features. You usually get the usual talking to the actors. There's a thing where they talk about the heart of the Justice League, where they talk with like Jeff Johns and Dan Dido, etc., etc. The special feature that I liked the most was something called Suit Up, The Look of the League. And they talked about how Cyborg's costume was basically pajamas, but they had to build it in the computer. They also talk about the Flash's costume, which is supposed to look like it's 3D printed. It was, I think, is one of the coolest things about this movie. One of the other cool little things about it is Superman's costume is actually two pieces. There's a metallic undercoat, which gives it this shiny metallic sheen seen in the movie, and I never would have known that had I not watched the special features. However, though, that being said, noticeably missing from this is a commentary. And I know Zack Snyder's had some personal problems that I don't really want to get into it of late, and I feel bad for the guy. But there's no commentary from the actors. There's no commentary from, like, a Geoff Johns or someone like a major legend in the comics industry. And a lot of the things DC has done, at least with their animated stuff, is they tend to put on episodes of their cartoons. Now, it would have been really fantastic to have the first episode of Justice League Unlimited, or Justice League itself, or even Superman the Animated Series, or something like that, or the New Adventures of Batman and Superman. There's a lot to like here, honestly, in terms of a Blu-ray and DVD, because like I said, you are getting a fantastic value. The special features are worth it, though none of them go above 15, 20 minutes, give or take. But the movie itself, is it worth watching? Yes. I think if you go into this movie with fairly average superhero movie expectations, I think you'll have a good time. Does the movie have problems? Yes, it does. Like every comic book movie, there are problems. But if you want a fun DC movie that does its best to expand its universe with new characters and new concepts, then I don't think Justice League is a bad bet. So you can check out Justice League, available now on digital, Blu-ray, and on DVD.
Leave me alone, geek boy.
That was my review of Justice League. Hopefully you have enjoyed the show. This past week here on Twig, we've talked about Stephen Hawking. We've talked about the world of the strange, the weird, and potentially some political stuff that may come out of that on our weird news segment. And we reviewed an indie game, Little Triangle. Hopefully you'll have a chance to check that out on Steam and the Nintendo Switch. So, gotta say, I'm actually fairly happy with the way this week's show... I'm actually really surprised how in-depth our weird news discussion got, which is something we hope you guys take a look at and think about, because, sure, sometimes we do jokes on this show for the lulz, but sometimes, occasionally, things will come up that really make you think, because this political landscape may not be the same in 100, 200 years, hell, even 5 years from
it
now.
It might not be the same in 6 months, dude.
Yeah, it's so... We live in such a turbulent time right now where we don't know who's sitting on the nuclear button, either a guy down south or a guy way, way in the east. What can you say? It's an interesting time to be alive.
I was at that Bill Burr stand-up concert last night, and he made a joke about Kim Jong.
Yeah.
And he said, he goes, that dummy, he goes, you guys are all laughing in Canada, but when he presses the button to fire a nuke and he wants to hit Toledo and he's too stupid and hits Toronto, we're just outside the kill zone. And he was, and he's right. Like he goes, if his missiles aren't firing right, it could just easily hit the wrong spot, and then bam, what happens to the border between Canada? If it hits right on the border, where's the border of Canada? No man's zone?
Yep, pretty much. So we can all look forward to living in the Fallout universe, where we'll be giving bottle caps to each other and enjoying Nuka-Cola in the irradiated wasteland that is Toronto.
Just another glorious day in this man's army.
I want to play Pogs.
I have a few upstairs. Just a few.
You know what? That'll be the new currency. Not Nuka-Cola caps, Pogs.
Buddy, I got the best Keenies.
I got slammers. They'll get me weapons.
You get the razor. I used to use a metal pipe that I found at the schoolyard that was shaped like an actual Keeney. I would break them in half.
Yeah, hit your friend in the head and then take their pog.
A crazy bone. Jesus.
Or was it devil sticks?
Yeah, devil sticks.
Oh yes.
Or let's go back to playing marbles like our no.
I used to use marbles as slingshot.
Man, got dude, Jack.
Oh, there's always that one kid that you go, oh, your family's poor.
We are
their devil sticks are just actually three sticks that they found in a tree on their way to school.
So hopefully you will join us next week here on Twig. We'll have a review of Sea of Thieves. I'm not sure what else we're going to have in next week's show. You'll just have to stay tuned to find out. Once again, we do welcome all the input. You can give us feedback at thisweekingeek.net. We always look forward to hearing from you. You can reach us on Twitter. You can find me at Birdman Dodd.
You can find me at Emperor Wayne.
At Turd or Treasure.
Find me at Mr. Christopher.
So hopefully you have enjoyed listening to the show. Once again, I've been your host, Mike the Birdman Dodson, Live Free or Die Herd, and hopefully you've enjoyed this voyage into the world of the fucking stupid.
Well, kids, that's enough for one night, eh?
You know, I don't think this show is suitable for children.
I don't think this show is suitable for anybody.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Tune in next week to hear something like this.
Insert a clip here, you dick.
Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content. And subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at thisweekingeek. And check out our Instagram at @twig_official_podcast. If you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time, and remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
We now join America's most popular show already in progress. Everybody loves Hypnotoad.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Old moon, yeah. That's Hugo, tickling the ivories. He just saved by bundling home and auto with Progressive. Gonna finally buy a ring for that gal of yours, Hugo? Send her my condolences. Hi-oh! This next one's for you, too. There's a burglar in my heart. Thank you.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Hi, I'm Jay Farner, CEO of Quicken Loans. 30% of Americans who are planning home improvements of $5,000 or more will pay for those renovations with a high-interest credit card. That may not be a great idea. A better idea may be to take cash out of your home with a Quicken Loans 30-year fixed-rate mortgage. The rate today on our 30-year fixed-rate mortgage is 4.125%. APR, 4.22%. Call us today at 800-QUICKEN or go to rocketmortgage.com.
Rate subject to change. 8.88% fee to receive this discounted rate. Call for cost information and conditions. Equal housing lender. License in all 50 states. NMLS number 3030.